Siren Radio.
Let's face it, without that momentary pause, where would we actually be? I don't know. Somewhere in the hospital or infirmary. Oh, no, that was Billy Connolly. Okay, it is almost time now for that exciting period where the whole world awaits, whether you happen to be in Surrey, whether you happen to be in Los Angeles, wherever you happen to be. Even Cape Town, South Africa, no doubt, are keen to actually find out what is the weather for Lincoln, as defined by your good self, Gabriella Peralta, in Gibraltar.
That's a lot of anticipation for a very short weather.
You've always got to use a little touch of hyperbole. It's the whole business of show to kind of warm the cockles of people's hearts as we actually approach 3 minutes past 8 o'clock here on the first Thursday of April 2018. Gabriella, the world awaits.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln is highs of 11 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade. It's a sunny day, and it's breezy as well.
Genius. I mean, I feel as though our work is almost done now, Shaylee. We could probably...
Should we go?
after that, you know, there's what else can we actually do other than...
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
There you go. Marvellous stuff. So I take it, Gabriella, that you may well be going to see Ready Player One yourself in Gibraltar in the next 7 or 8 days.
Yep, hopefully I'll go next week. My boyfriend's just finished reading the book, so no doubt we'll go to a cinema and he'll tell me that the book's a lot better than the film.
As is always the way.
As always is. So he's just finished reading the book and he's very excited to go, so we'll probably go next week when it's in cinemas here.
Overall, I enjoyed it. Now, I've got to say that I enjoyed it. It took me time to get into it, though, because initially there's a part of me, that slightly sceptical side, which says, oh dear, it's formulaic cinema making, it's formulaic movie making, it's the way of Spielberg back to his line of just ticking boxes and so on. But it, I would say stay with it, it pays dividends.
Does it improve afterwards?
It does improve. Interesting enough that the various online surveys have actually said that there isn't any mid-end credits trailer or any end trailer, so you can actually leave, actually, sort of the other thing there.
Oh, but that's the best part.
I think. Well,
because then the people who do leave, you're like, ha-ha. Yeah.
Personally, I always like to actually...
No, I like to leave. I don't like to wait.
Do you?
Well, no, I'm a waiter.
Yeah, my boyfriend makes me wait. Yeah, he's like, no, we have to see...
There are people whose livelihoods are actually being put on screen. Yeah. Exactly.
You can watch it on YouTube when you get home.
Yeah, but it's not the shared experience of yourself as the sole person left in the cinema waiting until the final musical credits wait up. It is interesting how movie credits have actually expanded over the years, though. I mean, there was a time, if you look back at movies made pretty much pre-1980s, that effectively it was the end. That was it. You know, title sequence was the end. And sorted through. Maybe because way back in the day, of course, there used to be the portrayal of the national anthem, which also used to make people stand up, I believe, when people used to go to the cinema.
Wow.
Soon before I was born.
I never knew that. That's
the interesting line. Allowing for, obviously, the things that are actually there, it's always worth noting that when they actually get round in the end credits to music, and they include music in the soundtrack, that's pretty much it, okay?
Because
there's just a few more little moments after that.
Spoiler alert.
It's just for those people who actually sort of see, like Gabriella, oh Lord, how many moments have I actually got to wait for this? Usually about 5 or 6 minutes.
She'll peg it as soon as it's done. She'll be like, bye.
Try and think.
I'm so impatient. I just stand there like, oh my God.
Gabriella, think
of
that.
And they're not worth staying for. The Black Panther one, I stayed for last.
Yeah.
It's foreshadowing for the next film.
I hadn't watched any of the other superhero films, so for me it meant nothing. I was like, oh, so there's some random guy that just left this hut and overlooked a beach.
Spoiler alert again.
Well, everyone else knew what it meant, but for me I was like...
Gabriella, don't worry, you've only got 17 movies to see before you can actually be completely caught up with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So that's something to do, you know, as we head towards Whitsun, which is great, you know, that's good news there. Anyway, how's Frodo? Because I was just about to say, take a lesson from Frodo's book. Frodo would always sit and wait for the end credits, I'm sure, if he was allowed in the cinema, which of course he isn't, but I'm sure if he's at home, he'd sort of say, wait until the final cinema credit has actually rolled.
Frodo is very lazy, so, for example, this morning with his food, not only did he have his food placed on the floor, you know, in front of him normally, he didn't think that was enough. He wanted to lie down on the floor and have the food
fed to him. Yes, yeah, yes.
This
yes.
sounds like my kind of dog.
Directly in front of his face to then slowly eat his food lying down. Yeah.
It's the exertion of lifting the neck.
It's the equivalence to a Roman emperor of actually having his grapes peeled.
Or a pharaoh, yeah.
Yeah, either of those two things.
And you feel ridiculous because you're doing it for a dog. You're pushing his food towards him and he's just lying down and he's refusing to get up for his
feed
food.
Feed me, pleb.
Perhaps he's actually got some kind of doggy language, which is, you know, in canine speak, looking to ensure, I bet I can get my mistress to do this. I'm sure I can get these. Look at this, you know. I'm just going to stay here. Just see how far she actually
him
goes.
And the cat next door have got a bet.
It'll be a definite line on that system. Still, never mind. Life continues. And indeed, as the programme continues, have you ever considered being a spy, Gabriella? I know you've probably still not got round to watching the James Bond movie, Living Daylights. I haven't forgotten, Gabriella. I mean, one of these days you might sort of...
I know. You've
only had it, six years now? Is that sort of basis? It's all right. I mean, by comparison, Shaylee's holding on to the Dunkirk thing. It's just a matter of
weeks. I'm holding it ransom.
Exactly.
He's not allowed it back.
But, you know, in terms of the spy scenario, it would seem that British folk are... pretty much keen and lovers of the spy scenario. 58% of those surveyed think that the spy thriller genre is fantastic. However, over a third of British folk do believe that they could be a spy, although another third think they wouldn't be very good at it.
Wow.
So we'll be talking to former GCHQ analyst Cameron Cahoon to talk about that particular side of things. Interestingly enough, when they believe that whether the world is secretly controlled by a group of shady elites, Siren Radio, do what we say, 29% said absolutely no. But obviously that means that 71% actually believe that the world is secretly controlled by a group of shady elites. And this idea of a deep state is one explored quite often in spy dramas, obviously with the likes of Spectre being a perfect example from James Bond.
Wow.
So, presumably there's nothing you can actually say to that, Gabriella, otherwise the security forces would actually land and immediately sort of capture you and that
SWAT
would be it.
Team.
As far as...
And I'll be a terrible spy.
What
that was to happen.
Precisely.
Who knows? I might be a spy.
I see.
We've outed a spy, Alec. Yeah,
this is the classic thing. Well, I believe, talking about spying, in terms of code scenarios, you actually do have a dedication in a few seconds to provide, but before we do that dedication, which will see us off for today, and over to Richard Fitzwilliams, who will be talking about Isle of Dogs.
That looks so good. Yeah.
Wes Anderson.
Love a bit of Wes.
And Ready Player One. Shaylee, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta, please?
Indeed. Short but sweet today. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning, Gabriella?
Yes, I have. Also short but sweet.
Excellent. And will you be back next Thursday?
Hopefully, yes.
Perfect.
And Gabriella, I believe you've actually got a dedication now that's lined up for us to the person that, as well as being a fantastic author, I've also said to Shaylee she is the actual bringer of the Easter eggs that now actually sit in front of yourself, Shaylee, to be consumed as and when you feel during the course
of the program.
I will not be peeling them for you, just in case.
God damn it.
Sorry, it's just not going to happen. But
just push the bag towards me.
Yeah, exactly. Gabriella, would you like to take this one away, please?
Okay, so the dedication is to Dawn G. Harris, and the song is Electric Light Orchestra and Mr. Blue Sky.
Why you had to hide away for so long? Why did we go wrong? sky. Please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong?
Moment Jump actually hits the soundtrack, you're left with this notion as to whether this is Spielberg battling against the whole evil of Facebook, social media, and the man taking the class out of a whole range of other bits and pieces in an oasis of calm. Or maybe it's just those two words, reality is reality, which I have to say, Richard Fitzwilliams, is the equivalent to Brexit means Brexit in terms of, well, that's one a heck of a useful philosophical quote. Brexit means Brexit. However, I will predict at this moment that there'll be doctoral dissertations being written at this moment and probably for the foreseeable future about the joys of Ready Player One. It's all right, Richard. Your microphone is up. You can hopefully hear us. Is that okay?
I can hear you, indeed.
Good.
Ready Player One is, it's certainly, I will describe it firstly as an extraordinary experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question there. You have a movie where Spielberg's, I have rarely seen a film, in fact, with so many cultural references.
I gave up after the first 50, actually, Richard. You've got your King Kong, you've got your Batman, you've got your War of the Worlds robots, you've got the robot from Lost in Space. I'm sorry, what can I say?
I mean, it's the problem with this movie, and I mean, there's so much good in it. Spielberg is, he's one of the great directors. He's in touch with his inner child. He's a master storyteller. We don't need to go through so much of the past, from the adventure movies, the realistic, from Saving Private Ryan to Schindler's List.
And those Lincoln. Don't forget Lincoln.
I mean, how could one?
The paper?
You've got an amazing career, and here he is looking at 2045, where many in the earth live in slums. To escape from such an existence, they people engage within an amazing game program. It's Oasis, and it's programmed by the late James Halliday. He appears quite frequently, by the way. It's creator, played by, and played very well by
Is he not just Steve a cipher for Steve for Spielberg himself?
Of course. Well, in a sense, or for Steve Jobs, or Mark Zuckerberg, or anybody involved in the amazing. Is it amazing? It's certainly an amazing film that the world we have today, which is so influenced by social media and also virtual reality games, the whole thing, it's almost, it is too much. Because finding a key to what is called the Easter egg in computer software, hidden messages, three keys are needed, and to find the key to Oasis, and basically inherit Oasis, which is what the ruthless, innovative online industries, a video game conglomerate, and also a manufacturer of virtual reality equipment, used to access Oasis, wants to own it. A ruthless chief executive officer, Nolan Sorrento, has amassed an army of what they're called as Sixers to seek the prize, but up against him, there is Wade Watts. Wade is an 18-year-old gunter. Gunters are those who play for the game to find the ultimate key to Oasis and themselves inherit it. He lives in an Ohio slum and with his aunt, but in the Oasis, he is somebody different. He's the person of his dreams. He is Parzival, and he's got an avatar. I mean, he befriends a female player, Artemis, after saving her, and then decides to go to the virtual Oasis library. This is an extraordinary and very imaginative organization, one could say. He sees, literally, you can go back in time and see how Halliday was able to create it and how he lived his life and look for the clues which would lead to the keys. And the other problem is you have to participate in a race that, well, no one's managed to win it when Spielberg has his races on the motorways. Who could loom up but King Kong or Godzilla in this rather amazing and quite extraordinary film? I mean, there's a bounty hunter with which the innovative online industry sends to stop Parzival and Artemis from succeeding. And you have an amazing cast, too. This movie includes Rylance. It includes Simon Pegg as Halliday's former collaborator. It also has Ty Sheridan, a bit of a nerd, but when he's Parzival, my goodness me, he's the guy of his dreams. And as Wade Watts, and Olivia Cooke is Samantha, who is also Artemis within the Oasis game. And Ben Mendelsohn makes a very possible villain of Sorrento. I mean, this is an extraordinary movie, and that is a pretty brief summary of just bits of it, because it operates both in the level in the game and also what is happening within reality, and then what happened when we go back in time, not to mention the cultural references, as we've been saying, to practically everything you could possibly think of that might be squeezed in. It is a good thing. Much of it is imaginative. Some of the races from the motorways, which get disrupted, some of the extraordinary scenes in the Oasis, the virtual Oasis library, some of them are extraordinary. I was gripped by this movie. The problem is, Oscar Wilde, I remember quipping, moderation is a fatal thing. Nothing succeeds like excess.
Richard, he's an American film director. I mean, inevitably, it's a Spielberger, although I know he hates that. And in fact, Spielberg has actually himself suggested he take legal action if any fast food chain actually started offering up a Spielberger as a kind of system from that. It was a fun movie. It took me a lot of time to actually get into it. I would say the first half hour you're left thinking, what are we doing with this? Is it a case of movie number by buttons? At the end of it, for me, it scores exactly the same as Black Panther, 8.5 out of 10.
For me, I have to say, I had a very different experience. I was sucked in immediately and fascinated. And that continued continued also with the use of colour, the use of music. I mean, you could go on and on and on in reviewing this, and also a good cast. But in the last 20 minutes, half an hour, and certainly climactically in some of the action scenes, and I would make the point, I've made this point before, that in so many of, you know, we're talking about a lot of Marvel movies, where they irritate and climactically can infuriate, is in the last action sequences where suddenly you feel you've simply got to have, when the bounty hunter tracks down Parzival and Artemis, for example, scenes of that sort, you've simply got to have loud explosions and very little sense occurring. This sort of the movie does not escape that, but it does take you down new, exciting, dramatic, and imaginative paths. For that relief, a lot of thanks.
Interesting, not that we do this on a regular basis, but looking at the nearly 500 reviews that have gone up on IMDb, and they're very much polarised. We have writers who would say relies heavily on empty nostalgia and pop culture references, but lacks engagement and a solid story of its own. A great movie, but different from the book. An instant classic. Welcome back, Spielberg. The book might be better, but the references work better on the screen. Not the story it could and should have been. What the hell was that? Is it possible to give 0 stars? That's the kind of line we got.
How rude.
That's just about said it all. And I mean, the point is, you could go on talking about a movie like this pretty well forever. But I did feel that the movie was good. It did go on too long, and what you had was something, I mean, with Minority Report, say, just contrasting it with another really, really impressive movie, I thought that much better. It was simpler. Obviously, if you're going to have King Kong and Godzilla wandering around, if you're going to have links to so many of Spielberg's movies, if you're going to have these extraordinary ideas, tribute surely to where it's due, but you did need, and Spielberg, which is one of the reasons some movies like AI, for example, which began so well and didn't end so well, I mean...
Yes, but that was Spielberg and Kubrick, Kubrick and Spielberg. So.
Don't mention Kubrick, we haven't even gotten to...
Let's go into The Shining. Let's go into The Shining now.
Yes, and I would perhaps prefer to stay there before I saw the last half hour of this movie, because... But the ends aren't tied up satisfactorily.
But the children win. That's what happens with Spielberg movies. The kids are okay. Great.
The problem is the impact of something that really was special and unusual is diluted by the fact that, I couldn't absorb everything that I was seeing. But having said that, it's well worth seeing to see what you make of it. Love it, loathe it, or go in between. You'll never forget it.
And I would endorse that, and as I said, for different reasons, it scores an 8.5 out of 10 for me. Pretty much the same as Black Panther. Shaylee, has that convinced you one way or the other to be checking out Ready Player One?
Oh, 100%. No, it sounds amazing. And in terms of the pop culture references, I think it's really easy to relate, so... You guys can, like, reminisce on back in the day.
Before you were born, Shaylee.
Yeah, true. Cool.
And in so many delightful ways, I have to say, the one LOL moment, to use a little bit of social vernacular there, for me was something I can't actually broadcast in full on radio, but it has to do with Chucky, where the F word is actually used.
Gross.
Yes.
You got Mechagodzilla versus the Iron Giant. What's not to love?
I would say it's quite a good idea to score the movies. If we did out of 5, I have to say I would certainly go to 3. But because if the last half hour had been different, it would have been a very, very different rating. The problem is what you do need to come out of this movie is not just thinking back from a critical sense, but to think of the impact it could have had he been... a little more, shall we say, the movie had been simpler, it had been more succinct. But, I mean, you've got what you've got, and you have an imagination there that's soaring into, heaven knows what,
Richard,
realms.
Reality is reality. Reality is real. I think an interesting line from a one-star offerer on IMDb is, my favourite part is at the end when they casually collapse the world economy 2 times a week because Spielberg's kids need a life lesson on putting their cell phones down. Basically, a spiritual successor to the Emoji Movie, which
that's embarrassing.
An exercise in excess held together by soullessness. Oh,
that's very harsh.
If Spielberg were listening, I think that he would appreciate the fact that so much has gone into this movie and the making of the movie, as I say, visually extraordinary. And I mean, the audacity of making a film like this. I mean, in the Oasis for the virtual library. I mean, looking for the clues. I mean, those scenes absolutely marvelous. And as I say, I did appreciate the cast. It's just when you feel there's an overdose of special effects, it can have, after so many movies which have suffered from this, it really can have an effect that dilutes the impact of something that undoubtedly is extraordinary. It is extraordinary. No one could possibly dispute that. But the loves and the hates, it stirs debate, and I'm all for that because it means, firstly, more people will see the movie, and hopefully then more people will be going to movies, which is what's happening, which is so good. So whatever people think of it, I mean, and as I say, I'm overwhelmingly
just favorable. Wait until it goes onto Netflix. You can watch it on your mobile phone. Sorry.
I won't watching it a second time. And as for the heresy of suggesting watching it on a mobile phone, yes, director Darren Aronofsky says, I don't care if you watch my movies on a mobile
just
phone.
Watch
you see, the rest are all Black Swan on the mobile. You should say that in the earshot of Quentin Tarantino and see what happens.
But he's working on another Star Trek movie. I will predict, actually, at this moment, Richard, that Phil Lynas, who has promised me he'll be seeing Ready Player One in the next 7 or 8 days, he will actually loathe it. He'll not be a fan. I'll pretty much say it. I can't see Phil Lynas having his boat floated at all by Ready Player One. I think we'll have a lot of vitriol, and we'll just have to say, let it go, Phil. That's all. That's all I have to say.
You might be pleasantly surprised. You never know.
I know my Lynas views on various other bits and pieces. He might even have difficulty, given that obviously he's a keen cat aficionado with Fuzz Aldrin, etc., liking Isle of Dogs, an stop motion animated film with the likes of Bill Murray and Wes Anderson and Liev Schreiber, and well, I mean, you can't have anything but good things to say surely about Isle of Dogs, not to be confused with the segment of London, which of course is referred to as the Isle of Dogs.
Of course, I absolutely have nothing but praise for these amazing characters who enter our lives whilst they talk to camera, because after all, these are dogs who communicate with us, and indeed we see most of this movie through the vision of various canines. It's a quirky, I mean, Wes Anderson's got his fan base, and his fan base will absolutely love this. I loved it. It's wonderfully zany. I mean, obviously, Grand Budapest Hotel was his great success. This is set in Japan, a dystopian near future. A young boy goes in search of his dog, and the mayor of Megasaki, called Kobayashi, has banished all the dogs to Trash Island because of dog flu. The problem is that Atari, who's lost his dog, his beloved Spot, is a ward of the mayor, and he steals a plane and is rescued when he lands on Trash Island by 5 dogs who are in a terrible state. You feel for these animals. One of the reasons you do is that the voices, imagine the 5, Rex, Ed Norton's voice, King, Bob Balaban, Duke, Jeff Goldblum, Boss, Bill Murray, and Chief, who's rather a former stray and anti-human, Bryan Cranston, who's always gives these super performances, been on screen, and here we have his voice. And Chief is helped by the female pure breed Nutmeg, who is Scarlett Johansson, and they're all searching for Spot. And could Spot have any connection with a tribe of cannibal dogs on part of Trash Island? Trash Island, by the way, is not a very enviable place to be sent to. The professor who founds a cure for dog flu is poisoned, and it's up to the American foreign exchange student Tracy, played by Greta Gerwig. That's why I can forgive any cultural appropriation here, because an American saving the day, or assuming that's what happens, no spoilers from me. If it's Greta Gerwig's voice, see, what's not to love for me? And she starts to investigate what's going on, and you can imagine what's discovered, and you could probably guess the ending of a movie that is a homage to Japanese cinema. There's been a lot of debate about the cultural aspect of it and the fact that it's a foreign exchange student who, shall we say, douses the way the canines are fighting back. But, I mean, this is an imaginative movie. It's very colourful. You see all the Japanese cultural influences in the visuals and so forth. And these animals are delightful. They're cute. They're sweet. The creation of Trash Island. Imagine sending sensitive canine to such a terrifying spot. I mean, it's one of these delightful movies that Wes Anderson, who can infuriate, and they don't. Not all his movies always appeal to people, but no question, he's pressing certain buttons, and they're working. It hasn't made a lot of money so far, but I predict that families will find it very, very diverting. And how could you resist Nutmeg? Scarlett Johansson speaking to you.
It was on the front cover of Sight and Sound. It's obviously guaranteed if it features on the front cover of Sight and Sound, it's not going to be a blockbuster.
Oh, it's a question. From an art house point of view, it is, and also from just a popular point of view. So if you want a movie that's going to amuse and divert and the family will love, I think that it's, as I say, I really recommend it. Wes Anderson's built this fantastic fan base after the Grand Budapest Hotel soared to enormous.
And Fantastic Mr. Fox didn't, but obviously he had another kind of canine thing there, and it's another dystopian world. We probably need a mashup between Spielberg and Wes Anderson to actually have Ready Player One, Two. Isle of Dogs.
And of course, on Trash Island, I ought to say that I'd have added some trash. For example, Mother, Suburbicon.
Oh, please, please. I mean, for goodness sakes. Before
too
long, before too long, he'll be starting off on The Man from U.N.C.L.E. again as being not anything less than a cultural classic.
Judah, I left that
So, Shaley, Isle of Dogs, is it something you'd be going to see as a double bill with Ready Player One, or would you say there's so much information there, I have to sort of give it its own special visit?
I think Isle of Dogs definitely supersedes Ready Player One for me. As a massive Wes Anderson fan since The Royal Tenenbaums, I just love how he sees the world and his whole vision about colour. No, definitely. Definitely a fan.
It's witty and it's charming. It's, as I say, some of these animals. I mean, I remember some of the successful way the Jungle Book was voiced. And I mean, Lupita Nyong'o, particularly, and Idris Elba. And here you'll find these.
It's got Japan, it's got nuclear explosions. What's
not
to love?
Not love it, yeah.
Greta Gerwig as Tracy. Don't forget that.
As if one could. Shaley, last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams, please.
As always, it's been a pleasure. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, we've had a couple of very unusual movies to discuss.
Both equally enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And
I would say, I would give Isle of Dogs, well, it's so difficult, you see, because then you think of really good pieces out of Ready Player One.
By the way, Richard, did you see Ready Player One in 3D IMAX, or did you think that would be just sensory overload?
I thought the latter, and I 3D, I won't say that I go with Mark Kermode, who actually wears dark glasses in protest sometimes against 3D movies. I've seen it in one of his blogs. But I don't, apart possibly from Hugo, I mean, there have been odd movies. Certainly Great Gatsby wasn't helped by it. I don't feel that it really adds. I mean, it was Sam Gilbert, you may remember, who said a widescreen makes a bad film twice as bad. When it comes to 3D, it doesn't rescue a bad film, and it doesn't really do that much for me. But certain movies I see in 3D, in this case, I really didn't think that it mattered, and I don't feel I missed anything.
Yeah, obviously, when Solo comes along, the Han Solo story, in a few months' time, who knows what could happen. Did you get the second question out, by the way, Shaley?
Not yet.
Oh, better go for that, then.
Will you be back next Thursday?
I shall indeed, and hopefully by then the Duke of Edinburgh will have left hospital. That has been, of course, news, but it sounds it's good news, and it's well worth remembering that the Queen Mother was in twice for hip surgery in her 90s and was absolutely fine on both occasions.
Precisely. And now, for those people who like the end credits in particular of Ready Player One and 1980s nostalgia... Of course, Primeval's still a thing. Science fiction series don't fade away. They continue ever onwards, really.
Who was it? Was it like an S Club?
Yes, oh, Hannah was, Spirit.
That's it. You've got it.
That was an item with Lee, also from Primeval, who was Andrew Lee Potts.
Really?
Andrew Lee
Potts
and Hannah Spirit. These are the kind of things that really are cultural and guru.
They're worth chatting about.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to make a movie with lots of pop cultural references, Ian Lennox is the man to go to. Interesting enough, we talked about Dawn G. Harris, of course, who was on the programme last night. Diviner, if it was released in Newcastle, would be Diviner.
Diviner Pet, Love and Loving Hitty.
I was going to use that last night, but I thought it's our first show. Don't go there.
Don't scare her.
Exactly.
Wait until the third time she's on air.
She'd already travelled 156 miles to get to the studio. Yeah, they left her.
That's really impressive. That's dedication.
I thought so. I mean, you know, Ian Lennox, year in, year out, he's had an invitation to come down to Lincoln. Can he be bothered? No. You know, first novel from Dawn G. Harris, and she drives up from Surrey, Emma Tinson territory, of course, all the way up to Lincoln just to be on the show. Very good. And left us some eggs. Marvellous. Ian, are you keeping well? And how are Ollie and Obo?
They're having their breakfast at the moment.
Do you
feed them? I slept in and just fed them. Yeah. I fell asleep to an audio book and discovered I slept through the whole of Queen Victoria's rain.
Right, 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 which is fun. Now, can you share with us and the listener and the growing number of Lennoxites who are actually out there, what, pray tell, was the audiobook that actually put you in a state of coma?
Oh, yes, I had a dinner for the... my latest book is about a bare knuckle fighter.
Yes.
And as you know, I know very little about fighting, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to do some research. But also, I had some friends who I met during my career as a journalist TV guy who were very good fighters. One was a world champion, and well, two world champions, actually. And the others were exceptionally good at what they did. And through sort of my dealings with them, I gained some knowledge of the life which they lived and the science of fighting, you know.
Mm.
So when we brought the book out, Glenn McCrory, who was an ex-cruiserweight world champion, loaned me his fist for a picture.
Yes.
For the front cover.
Yes.
And some of the other lads helped as well. They came along to publicity photographs. So we decided that we're going to have a dinner. And we had that on Monday, and we had a lovely time.
I'm looking at a photograph now in which we actually
had
of North East champions, you see there.
Yeah.
Left to right, in case you're looking at this in stereo, dear listener.
Ooh, I'm trying to see which one's
Paul here. Tucker, John Gibson, Glenn McCrory. There's Ian Lennox, just sitting next to Steve Black.
That's right. Had a great night with him, yeah.
And Paul Lister. Of course,
that's
he's
him.
Also there.
He's a North East heavyweight champion now.
So did you feel like getting the old circuit? Come on, have a go. If you think you're hard enough, I'm sure you felt that you were about to pass him. Did you not so feel yet? Come on, Glenn, have a go if you think you're hard enough, pet.
If I said that, Roosevelt.
You don't just say, Sunderland, you're going down, come on, have
They're
a go.
They're all the Castle supporters.
Yeah, yeah, all
of them.
What, even Glenn McCrory?
It's a, yes, oh. Yes.
Yeah,
it's a few references of me, my friend.
Oh, well, never mind. At least Newcastle fans don't actually destroy coaches when they're actually around.
What about the last night?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I came back from a dinner with my children, and it was half-time, or nearly half-time, 3-0.
Yeah, okay.
And you just looked like an empty team.
It was the shock of being attacked by all those Merseysiders, that's all I will say.
Yeah, that was pretty disgraceful.
And then you actually have a German referee with a German manager, you know, come on now. And then you have a perfectly good goal disallowed, and then there's an offside decision
that's
there, and you have penalty not sort of put together. It's
one thing after another, isn't it?
You really should have won 4-3, should you?
Well, you know,
yeah.
Let's just hope we save it for a triumphant game against those other team from Manchester over the weekend. But still, anyway.
Well, you're going to win that anyway, aren't you?
The question we put to you, Ian, was what audiobook were you listening to which put you to sleep?
Queen Victoria.
I thought I slept in the rain last night. Oh, I see. So an audiobook...
But it could have been anything. I always go to sleep on audiobooks. I don't know why. I can't retain my concentration. I used to do that on holiday, you know, when the old tapes used to have.
Yeah.
Well, used to go around at the reverse side, you know. I used to fall asleep and I couldn't find out what I was up to before I went to sleep.
You see, with
maybe it's the voice.
Well, it can't be, because it's any tape did have the same effect.
This is the man who actually wanted me to do an audiobook for Ian Lennox and the Brothers, basically, back in the day.
He
would have fallen asleep.
Yeah.
You know, I could have actually said yes.
I was about insomnia at the time, Alex. So.
Yeah, so it goes. Anyway, Shaylee, any questions you'd like to put to the Lennox Meister about whether he actually would have ever considered being a spy? Because this is a question we're putting to a few folk. We'll be speaking to former senior analyst at GCHQ, Cameron Cahoon. And, we need to ask the question. Shaylee, we'll put it to you. Would you ever consider being a spy, Richard? Ian, rather. Whoever. Whatever your name happens to
be. The daughter of one of my friends has asked to join MI something.
Can't say anything. Can't reveal
your
name.
In Oxford.
Yeah.
And apparently that's where they recruit a lot of the very bright people.
So I keep getting emails
though. A, I would be
asked
in the first place, and B, I would be absolutely, totally unsuitable anyway. I haven't got the powers of concentration that be needed, and I don't know.
Well, apparently three in ten folk, when questioned, said they'd be a pretty bad spy, with a further 38% saying there's no chance they'd be able to keep it hidden from their family. However, 6% of those surveyed were so brazen about it, they said they'd find quite a bit of satisfaction in answering the question, what do you do, with, I'm a spy.
Yes, no one believes them.
I'm an espionage.
Exactly.
Yes.
Very, very strange.
I'm in the industry of killing people.
Not necessarily.
That's the thing, you know, I read about the Philby and Duncan Burgess MacLean thing. I mean, they were intensely idealistic. They were people of the 30s. A lot of the intellectuals of the 30s were very left-wing. They saw the American influence as being pernicious and stuff like that. And the Philby went in for idealistic purposes. But the fact is, it became so sort of immersed in it. I mean, he just seemed to shrug off the fact he was responsible for the deaths of a lot of people. Because the information he was given a ruthless Russian regime, which I think was mainly under Stalin.
And then you got the Mata Haris of the world, and then
she had a good time, didn't she?
Allegedly. I don't think I've actually met the lady myself in the whole time of things. Let's move on to The Girl's Guide to Growing Up Great, which we'll be speaking about with author Sophie Elkin, who has produced a whole range of texts and focuses on the whole notion of it was hard to find a text for girls which has empowering messages, straightforward information, kindness, humour and empathy. There is actually a chapter on boys here, because knowledge is power, with quirky illustrations from the fabulous Flo Perry. Have you ever been gender biased in your writing, Ian? I mean, most of your books, it has to be said, are probably pretty masculine, really. I mean, it's something I think even Shaley noted.
I agree.
Or is it a case of, I'm never going to get in touch with my female
when
self?
The women were portrayed, they were portrayed in very stereotypical...
Stereotypical female ways.
We won't say what they were.
We won't do that, etc. Read it yourself. Buy the book. Read it, and you can find out. Read my review on Amazon. You can find the same thing. Is that a fair point, Ian, or is it a case of dinner talk daft pet? I'm not going to write for women. They should be kept at home.
I don't know. There's an actress who was once asked when she wanted to do a voice for one of my books, The Brothers, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And she wrote back saying, in principle, yes, because she liked the way I treated women.
Well, I think The Brothers is probably the best one, if I'm being absolutely honest.
Yeah.
In terms of sort of gender balance, I think certainly bare knuckle, not quite
there. Well, no, I mean, that's a totally different theme, isn't it? Mm. I mean, it's basically about a guy who's fighting. He's trying to find love, actually. But the other one is Gentlemen and Players, where I think the girl is. Two or three of the women are quite well described. The main character, the main female character, actually changes dramatically from what she was as a child to what she became through love. And she found it everything. She confronted her father, she confronted a historical past, and she gave it all up for a man who came from mean.
Exactly. The transformative nature of life.
Yeah.
The other quick question we needed to put to yourself, Ian, was when's the last time you went to the cinema?
A long time, because I watched a lot of films on television at home. Mm-hmm. I think...
Do you have a big screen?
Yes, I have, and also a very good sound system.
So there's no need to go out and actually have people munch their popcorn
like a mini
over
cinema.
You, effectively.
Funny enough, I was speaking to, I don't know if you met a guy called Max Adams, an archaeologist who now writes books.
No.
And he and a friend of mine is a producer of Tiny Teas, we used to go to the films together, cinema together, and we're trying to fix up a date where we can all meet up to go to the film.
Well, consider this that little nudge in the direction. Consider this your friendly neighbourhood midweek drive morning edition nudge to actually go and have that social experience with Max and the other bloke you can't
remember. What would you recommend?
Well,
it's cold, yeah.
No, I was going to say Ready Player One. I was going to say Isle of Dogs. But then again, Ollie and Obo, he might prefer more feline aspects.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So either of those two would be there. I mean, do you prefer... What genre do you like, Ian? I mean, are you more of a rom-com? Are you more of a...
yes,
I can't imagine
a rom-com,
Ian being a
rom-com. A really good rom-com. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
totally predictable. They're obviously going to get together in the end. But,
yeah.
That
surprises me.
Pardon?
I'm surprised that you're a rom-com fan.
Oh, no, I'm a very soft chap, really.
Aww.
Yeah.
He's a marshmallow.
And I like the occasional thing I don't have to think very much about, like, you know, the revenge thing and, you know, the adventures and
Well, I'll tell you what, Ian, we're going to set the challenge over the next 7 days that Shelley and myself, and probably Richard Fitzwilliams as well, may I even ask Phil Leonis as well, to recommend a current movie that you can actually go and see with your chums. Okay? And, yes, if Max Adams wants to join us on the show sometime, feel free to invite him. He's more than happy to do that.
Oh, well, yeah, he's an exceptionally articulate guy, actually.
We always like exceptionally articulate guys and girls.
Makes me sound like a mumbling moron, actually.
I can't believe that.
He's
a
very, very clever chap, actually. I did an awful lot of filming of them, and I met him through doing a documentary with him when he was doing a dig in the Cheviots. Mm-hmm. And he was at the time lecturing, I think, at Durham in archaeology. And he went on to become quite a well-known writer about various things. He does lots of lectures. I spoke to him yesterday, and he's gone off to do a lecture about Alfred the Great, I think it was.
Interesting, we're back into medievalism. We clearly can't get away from that. I mean, after the notion that King Arthur was in fact born in Yorkshire, well, clearly he had to be. It's God's own country. We'll come back to that in a few
minutes. I didn't know you came from Yorkshire. So you're a Yorkshireman who supports Manchester
it's a moot point there, Ian, because technically Middlesbrough has always been betwixt and between. But there are those of us born in Middlesbrough who would say it's clearly North Yorkshire.
Other folk would turn around. The radio station up there.
Yes, exactly.
I never knew that.
Well, you see, that's what you call a revelation in the year of our Lord, 2018. Literally days after Ray Wilkins has moved to Heaven FM, the whole sort of balance from that point of view.
Well, nice guy he was. I've met a lot of people who have met him, and they all say the same thing.
Indeed, a sad loss to broadcasting. And, yes, as I say, even though he played for both Chelsea and United, he had a range of experiences, and yes, I always found him...
He was too nice to be a real broadcaster,
really,
actually,
nice.
Because he was always... he never really criticised anybody, really.
And he would refer to you as matey, even if you were female.
Yeah, well,
all right, matey.
Yeah. He was a bit like Jackie Milburn was. He was such a nice guy. Apparently.
Before my time, actually, Ian. I don't know. That's not what I've heard. But still, anyway, we salute you in every sense of the word. Quick plug for the Luminarium, which I had hoped to go to yesterday, but in the end, it was Ed Fortune and Ryan Jones who headed off to represent Siren at the press launch of Luminarium. And this is a wonderful exhibit, an installation system that's right in front.
I wondered what that was.
The Luminarium.
Kai Valentine went as well.
I'm sure everybody went. You know, I was due to actually go, but no.
I was walking in, there's like this flat thing outside the uni.
With lots of lights. It's gone sensationally well across the whole base. It's an international installation that's been that's been set up to celebrate 10 years of the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. So well done, and well worth catching. It's just for about another 2 or 3 days you've got to actually go and check out the Luminarium here at the University of Lincoln. So, as we head into the second part of the studio, which is he accesses his script and running order here, that's the rustling you can actually hear. I don't normally actually make these sort of noises, but I just thought, what the hey? You know, it's the rustle of paper. But we actually have Emma Tinson, hopefully, with more updates from Surrey. I'm not sure. Emma said she wasn't around. Anyway, we might get to Emma Tinson. Sophie Elkin, author of A Girl's Guide to Growing Up. Great. Nick Smith, the show director for the North of England Horticultural Society's Springflower Show. And Anita Bean and Giles Brooke will be talking about sugar consumption and so on, as well as from GCHQ, Cameron Cahoon, who's going to be joining us. Would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox now, please, Shaylee McKenzie?
Indeed. Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
I have. Time has flown.
Ah, excellent. And can we rely on you for next Thursday?
I do hope so.
See you then.